I have the privilege of talking with you. As Pastor Brian said, my name is Pastor Shauna, and I am the pastor to families with children here. And I get the privilege to talk to you guys today about Avengers Endgame. Now, before I get started, I have to say this will be full of spoilers. So if you get up and walk out because you don't want to hear the spoiler, I'm going to assume it's because you haven't watched the movie, not because you don't like what I have to say. So, please don't get up and walk out. I don't want you to walk out anyways, but it is a good movie, and if nothing else, maybe it'll just challenge you to go check out the movie. It is out on streaming right now, Netflix and iTunes. I had to look very, very hard to find this movie. It was a little bit intense for a little while. So let me give you guys a little bit of an intro, okay? So the point of Endgame is that, as Brian said last week, the Avengers all got together to fight this epic bad guy named...
Thanos.
Oh, there we are. There's someone. Thank you, Matthew. You're my hero, man. So they all got together to fight Thanos, but as contrary to a lot of superhero movies, they did not succeed. Thanos won. And so this video or this movie picks up where all the Avengers are trying to deal with their loss. That's a hard moment to be in when you have all pulled out all the stops and fought as hard as you can and you still lost. And we are going to talk, really hone in today on a guy named Bruce Banner, also known as the Hulk. But before we get into him, let's kind of set up the movie a little bit. Someone got the bright idea that maybe we could go back into time. This is a very, very realistic movie. And we are going to go back in time and get the stones that have been destroyed, and we are going to set things right. We're going to try again. And we're going to try to bring back all the things that we have lost, and we are going to rally together again. They have to get some people on board. So they start going around to all the Avengers in their lives, as they are at the moment, and trying to talk to them about what their plan is and how they play into it. Now, Bruce Banner. They come to Bruce Banner, and for those of you who don't know Bruce Banner, he is also the Hulk. And what happened is he was a science researcher, who... through the course of researching, he was exposed to gamma rays, and because of that, one day he gets really, really angry, and the Hulk emerges. And after that, Bruce Banner has to fight this alter ego. He's always in war with himself, and it seems like either he has Bruce or he has the Hulk. And at first in the Avenger movies, we realize that when the Hulk kind of emerges, Bruce Banner has no control at all. And as the course of these Avenger movies kind of evolve, Bruce also evolves. He gets to the place where, as the Hulk, he at least knows the good guys versus the bad guys, and he's able to help the Avengers, but it still takes quite a lot of effort and a really cute girl to calm him down and bring Bruce Banner out again. But then we realize that he still doesn't have control over both selves. Either the Hulk is in charge and Bruce has no control, or Bruce is in charge and he can't bring out the Hulk. In fact, even in the last movie, even when he needs the Hulk to emerge to fight the bad guys, he can't get the Hulk to kind of come out of hiding, or he can't trigger the Hulk because he has no control. I know this is a fictitious character, but I think we all can identify with that, can't we? A lot of times we have these things, or these, maybe we'll call them masks that we put up, but really there's these two selves warring against each other. The real self and the one we want to portray. You see, Bruce did not like the Hulk. In fact, he saw it almost, we'll see in the clip coming up, he refers to it almost as a disease. He doesn't want to deal with the Hulk, but until he actually accepts the Hulk, until he actually admits that the Hulk is in fact a part of him, he has no control. When the Avengers come to see the Hulk in this clip, they see someone completely different. Let's check out this clip right now. I think, though we can't say that the Hulk was like a mask for Bruce Banner, it definitely was almost an armor that he would put up. And I want to talk to you guys today about the differences between being a mess and wearing a mask. I would like to go as far as to say that God will bless and can bless your mess, but he will not ever bless your mask. Let's unpack that just a little bit today. You see, there's one part of this analogy that doesn't really hold true with the Hulk, okay? And that is because he accepts it and the Hulk is actually a good thing, right? But for a lot of us, our masks are not something that we should hold on to. You see, a lot of times our masks are fake us's that we portray to other people. Now, this can be a really heavy subject, so I thought I'd lighten the mood with Pastor Shauna's story. When I was 23 years old, I was bivocational, so I was working full-time as a children's pastor in a church in Olathe, and then I was also working full-time at Starbucks and taking master's classes. It was a very, very busy time. But I always worked very early in the morning for Starbucks, so that way I could get those hours out of the way and then go into my day for children's ministry, and I inevitably got put on the drive-thru at Starbucks. So for those of you who might not be familiar with Starbucks, they have these like little headsets, and as you all pull into the drive-thru, the little headset will go ding, and whenever it goes ding, you have this script that you must say, okay? And actually, managers will come by and make sure that you're saying this kind of script, and it goes something like, "Hello there, welcome to Starbucks, my name is Shauna, what can I get started for you today?" And guys, that is fine, and that is all well and good, but whenever you're working in the morning and you get a ding, "Hello, this welcome to Starbucks, this is Pastor," or not Pastor Shauna, I wouldn't say that. "This is Shauna, what can I get started for you today?" After a while, that could get very, very, very monotonous, okay? And very, very boring. Now, some of you guys know me. I avoid schedules and I avoid routine like the plague. So this is something that used to kind of drive me crazy. So to change things up just a little bit, I would sometimes answer in different accents. So, you know, one day I would be all proper and I would talk with an English accent. "Hello there, welcome to Starbucks. My name is Shauna. What can I get started for you today?" And then other times, you know, I'd be a Southern Belle. "Hello there, welcome to Starbucks. My name's Shauna. What can I get started today for you?" Other times I would be an Australian accent, and that was, in my personal opinion, the English accent with food in your mouth, right? So, "Hello there, welcome to Starbucks. My name's Shauna. What can I get started for you today?" And then my personal favorite that I could only carry through, like, just the names of the drinks and the script, and that's the Irish accent. "Hello there, welcome to Starbucks. My name is Shauna. What can I get started for you today?" And so I would go through, I would go through these routines. Thank you. Thank you. I would go through these, but here's the thing, guys, is you had to keep track of which accent you answered the menu board with, so that way whenever they came around to the window, you knew what accent to engage them with. And, you know, I would be Shauna from Manchester, which is like 14 kilometers southeast of London, and I would just make up these things and go with it, okay? And it was a lot of fun. It really broke up the routine, but the one that I would do the most often was my English accent. You see, I was very, very comfortable with an English accent. In fact, one time, me and my friends, we went an entire weekend only speaking in an English accent. And so that was the one that, like, if I hadn't had time to prepare or think, that was the one I would just go to right away. Well, one day, one of my coworkers, Anthony, he looked at me and he goes, "You know, Shauna, one of these days you're going to answer that menu board and someone with a real accent is going to answer and, you know, kind of call you out." And I was like, "Anthony, we are in the middle of the United States. And we are in Kansas. Like, what are the chances that someone from London or, you know, England is going to come over here and come to this Starbucks of all places?" Well, a couple weeks later, I am answering in my English accent, and I, "Hello there, welcome to Starbucks. My name is Shauna. What can I get started for you today?" And this guy, Dave, which me and Dave actually ended up being really great friends. At the time, I didn't know Dave. And so Dave answers back and he goes, "Hello there, darling. I just have one question for you. Where'd you learn that shorty accent of yours?" And I was like, "Whoo!" And so I just get off the little headset right then. I just take it off and I look at Anthony. I go, "You're taking this one. I am not going to the window. I am hiding in the back until he leaves. Do not tell anyone it was me." Okay? Anthony, being the great friend that he is, went to the window, and Dave is talking to him. He gets his change and gives him his drink. And right before Dave leaves, he goes, "Hey, who was the girl that was talking over the accent?" And I'm kind of around the corner, and I'm like, "Don't say anything. It wasn't me. Don't say anything." Anthony looks at me, looks at Dave, and goes, "Oh, that was Shauna. Let me go get her for you. I'll have her come talk to you." And so I went and I talked to him. He gave me some pointers. Apparently, there's a difference between the English northern accent and the English southern accent, which I didn't know. And so it actually, I mean, it improved my English accent, and I got a great friend out of it. It was awesome. But to make this story even better, no joke, about a month or two later, I was with my roommate, Martha. We were in Walmart, and in the pharmaceutical section, picking up, I think, Band-Aids or something. And I noticed that there was this guy who kept, like, looking at me, but it wasn't like, "Ooh, you're cute," looking at me. And he was older, so that's not what it was at all. It was like, "I recognize you, and I don't know why I recognize you," kind of a thing. And so I didn't really think much about it, but we made eye contact a couple of times. And the third time, it was like awkward enough to where he felt like he needed to come say something. And so he came up to me and goes, "Hey, I have a really weird question for you. Do you work at the Starbucks at 151st and Black Bob?" And I go, "Oh, yeah, I do." "Oh, that's how I recognize you. You're the Americano with two sugars." And he's like, "Yeah, that's me." He goes, "I know this sounds so weird, but I always thought you were from England." And I was like, "Oh, my bad. Yes, I sometimes do that, right?" But the moral of the story, guys, is sometimes we can commit to Mass, but the problem is if we commit to Mass, either we have two options. We can carry that commitment through all the way to the window, right? And we can carry that through, but we have to keep that mask on, or we finally have to admit who we really are. And that is the part, my friends, that is really, really difficult. Now, sometimes, my friends, I think our masks, some of them can be very, very serious. We got an addiction that we're covering up. We got lies that no one knows. We got, you know, everyone thinks we got a great marriage when we're actually fighting all the time. Or everyone thinks that we're really well off when we're struggling with debt. Some of the things can be really, really tough, but then others can be minimal, but still masks. Things like, "Oh, I put up with this person over and over again, but I really can't stand them," which it's good that you're nice to them, but it's still a mask. Some things are like, "Oh, well, I have to do this because I feel required," but we pretend that we're doing it out of the goodness of our heart. I think for pastors, at least for me, that's really easy to do. You see, because we are professional Christians as pastors, we get paid to react correctly, right? But too often, what we can do, and guys, I don't think that this is just pastors. I think this is well-seasoned Christians. We can know what we need to do, and so we can get really, really good at pretending. We do our own thing when we're alone by ourselves, but we know exactly the right Bible answers to say when Pastor Nicole asks a question. We do our own thing, and we're very, very selfish throughout the week, but we still know to go to Cornerstone Bible Study and to answer the correct questions. We know, what we're supposed to watch on TV, but we disobey our parents, and we still watch the things that we want to do. And all we do, guys, is rather than do what we know we need to, we just put on a mask and we pretend. So often, guys, the first step of all of this process of unmasking is very much like an addiction. We gotta admit that they're there. Now, guys, I don't want you to misunderstand this. I am not saying that we need to look at our masks and accept them and go, oh, okay, here's my mask. I love my mask. We're just going to leave this mask here. I'm saying, so understanding and identifying the mask doesn't necessarily mean that we accept it, but we must admit that it is there. Soon, we're going to talk about a guy named Jacob. And what we learn from Jacob's story is that God is very quick to bless the mess we have made of our lives, but he cannot, in fact, bless the mask because it isn't real. It's built on lies. And that does no one any good. Now, back to the Hulk. The Hulk, even though he was able to kind of accept and understand his two personalities, that didn't mean that his angry self just went away. One thing I found very interesting in the Endgames is that for the subtitles during this movie, the Hulk as he is now, understanding who Bruce Banner is and the best of both worlds Hulk, they refer to him as Nice Hulk. It's like Nice Hulk, colon, and then whatever he says, okay? So we got Nice Hulk here, and then we got very, very angry Hulk. Let's take a look at this second clip when we see Bruce Banner as he is now in 2019 having to interact with Hulk from 2012. Check out this clip. I love that clip. Well, guys, as I said before, I think that we will all, whatever mask we're dealing with, they'll resurface. You'll have to deal with them, and you'll have to consciously decide to put those masks down. And like I said before, I feel like with the Hulk, a little bit of where the analogy kind of fails us is that him accepting his mask made things better. And although I don't know that your life necessarily will be better when you admit your mask, I can tell you this. That's when God can use it. And once you admit that you're wearing one, that is the only time that God can be able to use it for the good of you or for maybe the good around you. Let's talk about Jacob. We're going to go into Genesis chapter 27 to start off with. And this is a story about two twins. So more boys, listen up. This might be something you might want to hear. They're twins. That's the reason why I said that. Jacob and Esau were twins. Jacob was just like a millisecond younger than Esau. And from the time Jacob and Esau were even in their mom's belly, they were warring and fighting against each other. In fact, it got bad enough that Rebecca, their mom, actually called out to God and said, I don't understand what is going on inside of me, but these kids, wow, they are intense and they are crazy. So I don't know what's going on, but God, you're going to have to handle this. And God said, hey, you know what? Contrary to all of the biblical traditions, contrary to what everyone else in your culture does, for your family, your youngest boy is going to lead or be over the oldest child. Now, for those of you who might not know biblical culture, one thing you got to understand is that birthright was everything in this biblical culture. Birthright gave you an automatic second blessing just because you were born first. And then all of the inheritance was automatically given to you once the father passed away. But Rebecca, the wife, knew for certain that Jacob was going to eventually lead Esau. What's funny, though, is that Jacob had been fighting and trying to be Esau from the very, very first of his life. We see over and over in his story that we'll talk about later that he has tried over and over again to take Esau's place as this firstborn. In fact, the name Jacob is called heel grabber. And the reason why he's called that, the parents were very, very creative in their name giving, because what they did is they watched them. Like Esau, he was named Harry because he was hairy, and Esau means hairy. Like, they're very creative with their names. But Jacob was called heel grabber because when he was born, he was actually clutching at the foot of Esau, and some people believe he was like trying to make his way out first before Esau, even as a baby. Now, one thing you may not know is that Jacob also means deceiver or manipulator. And what we see through Jacob's life is he begins to live into this name. He fights and he tries over and over again to wear the mask of being a firstborn. He tries it at every turn, but he stays, in fact, Jacob the deceiver. When the boys got older, Esau was known to be a little bit more of the impulsive kid, okay? He was the rough and tumble. He liked to be outside. He was the, oh, oh, oh. You guys know Tim Allen? Oh, oh, oh. Okay, maybe I just didn't. He was the one that went out hunting. He was the one that fixed things. He was the one that wanted to be outside rather than inside. And Jacob, for some reason or another, he preferred to cook. He preferred to stay inside. He preferred to stay with mom. And so these boys very much dramatically grew up living very different lives. Jacob stayed at the house with the women, and Rebecca, mom, kind of took him on as her favorite. Dad, though, got connected with Esau. They went hunting together. They went out camping together. Probably went fishing together. They got to do all the things together. And so these boys were constantly at war with each other. And even inside the womb when they were fighting, that didn't change once they were born. You see, I can't help but wonder if Rebecca was always like, but Jacob, you just wait. You just wait for your time, Jacob. It's going to come. It's going to happen. I know this because I heard God, and I know God whenever he's speaking to me. And he said, Jacob, that you were going to lead your brother someday. You'll be that firstborn, or at least when it comes to all the rights. Well, one day, we don't know how old Jacob is, but we know they're adults at this point. Jacob is cooking dinner. Esau has been outside for a really long time hunting, and it says that he came home and he was ravenous. He was super hungry. Now, hold on, pause, okay? We think, we don't know this for sure, but we think this was a manipulative gameplay for Jacob, okay? He knows Esau. He knows Esau does not plan ahead. He knows that Esau does not come home when he needs to. He waits until he's absolutely starving or until he gets the hunt, like the big game, before he comes home. And Jacob, I think, really I believe this, manipulated the situation so that just as Esau's getting home, that bread's coming out of the oven. Okay? Y'all have smelt homemade bread. Okay, that will make anyone who's not even hungry, hungry. And Esau comes home. Oh, Jacob, I'm so glad you made food. I am so hungry. I need some food. Like right now, Jacob, bring me food. It's lentil soup and bread, y'all. It's not even steak and potatoes, all right? And Jacob goes, oh, yeah, I got you. I got you. Here, one thing, really quick. Not a big deal. But what do you think about like trading your birthright for it? And Esau's like, what? What are you talking about? And he's like, okay, the birthright. Now, for you guys that don't know, the birthright is that automatic extra stuff that the firstborn gets just for being the firstborn, okay? And so he's like, So, not a big deal, but if you want this soup, and oh man, I tried a new recipe for the bread and got, oh Esau, it is amazing, you're gonna love it. But before you have that, I just wanna make sure that we're good with this. You trade your birthright and I'll give you the soup and bread. And Esau does it. I don't know what kind of negotiator he is, but he's not thinking it through. But so often, guys, isn't that what happens for us? Our mask doesn't come up when we're ready and we've prayed and we've been doing our devotions. Our masks show up. Our struggles show up when we're vulnerable, when we're hungry, when we haven't planned the way that we're supposed to plan. And that's when it all changes. So Jacob gets this birthright merely by making lentil soup and bread. Let's fast forward. Dad's about to die, okay? He's blind, he can barely see. And he calls Esau in and he says, Esau, it's about that time. I got to give you this blessing. Now, the blessing of the firstborn, guys, this is a legal transaction that transpires here, okay? It's not just like dad lays his hand on him and goes, okay, buddy, it's all you now. Like, I love you, carry on the family name. That's not what it is. It's a legal transaction that says, hey, this guy is going to be blessed the way that I'm blessed. He gets all of my stuff. He gets, you know, it's a legal binding transaction. And it's a big deal in this biblical culture. So there's feast prepared for it, and there's a party for it, and there's this whole process for it. And so Isaac calls in Esau, and he goes, Esau, I want you to go find the best game because we are about to prepare a feast. And when we have this feast, it is time for me to give you the blessing. Rebecca hears it. And she manipulates too. She calls Jacob and she goes, okay, Jacob, Esau went out. He's hunting game. It's going to take him a little while because you know he's going to want to find like the perfect buck or whatever. I don't know. The perfect thing. So he's going to be a while. So what we're going to do is we're going to kill a goat from our herd. That's easy. I'm going to take all of his like fur and I'm going to cover you because Esau means... there you are. You are listening. Esau means hairy, so I'm going to cover you all up so that you smell like outside and disgusting, like Esau always does. And you're gonna be all hairy, and then you're gonna go in to your father, and you're gonna pretend that you're Esau. Now, little side tangent, really quickly, moms, can we be really careful what we're teaching our kids? Especially when it comes to stepping in when it's not your place, okay? Because what we don't realize is that little action set Jacob on a course for over 14 years of mess. Moms, you have a lot of authority in your kids' lives. So, back to the story. Jacob's all done up. His voice isn't as low as Esau's. So he comes in, and we're at Genesis chapter 27, verses 18 and 19. He comes in, and he says, Father, but I think it was like, hey, Father.
Father. Father.
And Jacob, he manipulated enough, and he deceived his dad enough to where Isaac was thinking maybe it was Esau, but some things didn't line up. You see, Esau had just left. There's no way that Esau could have found game already. And so he goes, hey, son, who are you? Are you really Esau or are you Jacob? And what's so interesting here, guys, is Jacob pulls his mask. Do you remember the thing that Jacob wants more than anything? To be the firstborn. He wants that firstborn blessing. He wants that firstborn, all the perks that come with it. And so instead of saying the truth, he carries on his lie. I am Esau. I'm the firstborn.
I'm Esau, and I'm the firstborn.
And he was manipulative enough, guys, that this old blind man gave away his blessing to Jacob. Now, guys, one of the things about a mask is, like I said before, you got to commit to it, right? And this commitment to doing that sent Jacob on a wild goose chase for many, many years. He had to leave his hometown. He had to go live with a kind of an estranged uncle that he didn't really know. He himself got manipulated and lied to. He ended up with lots of kids from four different women, and there was absolute turmoil in his life. Now let's fast forward. He gets a message from God, and God says, Jacob, it's time for you to go home. It's time to lay down the mask. It's time to face all of the consequences that your choices have landed you. And it's time for you to get back to who you really are. You're not Laban's worker. You're not Laban, that's his uncle. You're not Laban's shepherd. You are a son of Isaac, and you are Jacob. It's time to go home. Can you imagine what's going through Jacob's head? Have you ever been back to your hometown after you haven't been there for a really long time? Houses have popped up. The same tree that was really small is a lot bigger now. You got stores that were never there before, and people who have moved or people who have added on to their houses. And as you're going, it's familiar, but it's changed. And as Jacob gets closer, guys, you got to remember, this has been years and years. He hasn't seen Esau. The last time he saw Esau, Esau swore that he was going to kill Jacob. Okay? And so he's sitting here going, what is this going to be like? Is mom a wife? Is Esau? How's Esau doing? Is he successful? Has he forgiven me? Does he still want to kill me? What does this look like? And he gets just about a day's ride away, and it says that he's already doing some groundwork. So he sends some people ahead to Esau with like all sorts of presents to hope that maybe Esau will forgive him. The night before he's supposed to see Esau, he comes up with a game plan. He takes all of his kids and all of his wives and kind of wives, however that works, and he sent them across the river. And I think he did that so that if Esau decided to kill him, at least maybe his family might be safe. And then it says in scripture in chapter 32 that Jacob was all alone. Now, this next part of the story, I'm convinced, is written by a guy, because there was no details between Jacob was alone and then he was wrestling with a man. Okay? That's all there is in between. Jacob's alone, now he's wrestling with a man. There's no how did the man get there? What does the man look like? How did they start wrestling? Did they get into an argument? And this is something that I really wish we could have known all of these details, but we don't. We only know that Jacob is by himself, and all of a sudden he starts wrestling with this man. We find out later that it is God in the form of an angel who is wrestling with Jacob. And guys, I think he was wrestling for Jacob's mask. He was looking at Jacob, and he's going, what are you fighting for? Are you still fighting for this firstborn right, or are you Jacob, and are you willing to accept it? Because in chapter 32, verse 18, it's almost morning. And Jacob and him had been wrestling all night long. In fact, Jacob's hip got pulled out of socket. Like, this is an intense wrestling game. This is not like arm wrestling, okay? This is intense. And it says that the guy looks at him and goes, hey, it's almost morning. We need to cut this out. And Jacob looks at him and goes, no, I will not let go until you bless me. Why a blessing? Let's rewind. On his way home, he sees the tree that's growing up that's bigger than what it was when he left. He sees these houses building up, and you can't imagine that he's not thinking about the last time he was here. Does that blessing really count from my dad if I really wasn't the firstborn? Am I enough to cut it? Does this really work? Why did I lie? Why did I do this? And now he is faced with all of these consequences that are about to come. It's the next day. These consequences are going to come. And he goes, why did I hold on to this mask? Why did I fight so hard just to be a stinking firstborn? Was it really that important? Was it worth all of my family? Was it worth being away from my home for so long? And he's going, I still want a blessing. Am I good enough as Jacob? His dad, when he came into the room right before the blessing, said, who are you? And this time, after Jacob asks for a blessing, this man looks at him and says, what's your name? Are you Esau? Are you the firstborn? Or are you Jacob? Jacob looks at him. And guys, I think he consciously decided to lay his mask down. He goes, I'm Jacob. I'm a manipulator. I'm a deceiver. I'm not the firstborn. I'm not worth the blessing that my dad gave. I am done trying to be that. And this is what God says. The very next verse, he looks at him and goes, no, 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 no. You're not Jacob anymore. I needed you to admit that you had that mask, but right now, no skipping a beat, no questions asked, God looks at him and he goes, no, 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 you're not Jacob anymore. Your name is Israel because you fought with God and with people and you won. Guys, he didn't win because he overpowered God. He won because he finally realized who he was. Guys, he went on to be the father of the Israelites. The father of a nation you may have heard of before called Israel. And my friends, I don't know that that could have happened if he was still fighting to be Esau. Now let's go back to Hulk for a second. The Avengers are able, sorry, this is a spoiler, but the Avengers were able to get all of their stones, and they are just about to try and bring everyone back. All the people that Thanos wiped out, they're going to try to get them back, and every single one of the Avengers have lost someone. So this is a pretty traumatic moment. Let's check out this clip and see what happens. It did work. Guys, I don't know what masks you're dealing with. I don't know what you struggle with. I don't know what you are fighting against or what you are fighting for. But I do know the best place for that mask is in the Father's hands. Because it's when it's in God's hands that it can be used. It's when it's in God's hands that he can bless someone else with your weakness. And it's when he can remind you that you are loved anyway. Some of the best moments are when we're honest about our masks and someone looks back at you and go, I still love you. I really believe that is the closest we can experience God's love with flesh on. And so many of us have never gotten there. So many of us have never experienced it because we still look at this mask like a disease. Guys, we don't have to accept it. We don't have to say that, like, this is okay and that, you know, everything's fine. But at the same time, until we admit it, we can't experience the love of God. Because God cannot bless our lies. He can't work with fake us's. We got to take off the mask. In Hebrews, the writer of Hebrews, we don't know who exactly the writer is, but he paints us this really great picture. And he basically says, guys, in our weakness, that is when God can work. This is what it says. For our high priest, and that's God, our Father, is able to understand our weaknesses. Because as Jesus, when he was on this earth, he was tempted in every way that we are. But he did not sin. But listen to this part, guys. Let us then feel very sure that we can come before God's throne where there is grace. There we can receive mercy and grace to help us when we need it. Until we're honest, though. Until we admit that we have these things that we pretend about or that we're fighting with that no one knows. God can't bless us because he cannot bless our masks. But he will bless our mess. It says in Romans that God will take all the things that we have screwed up in our life and he will orchestrate it in only the way he can for good to come. Not that there won't be any consequences, y'all, but that good will come out of it. I'm going to ask you guys to do something maybe a little bit scary. You see, I believe that we all have things we don't talk about. Whether it's big addictions or big debt or big marriage problems or it's little things like putting up with goober noggins or, having to deal or do something out of obligation that we pretend we do out of the goodness of our hearts. There's little things that we hide. And a second, I'm going to ask you guys to commit to tell one other person about it. But before I do that, I want to make this a safe place. So before I ask you to commit, I want to ask all of you to commit to this one thing. If you hear someone in a second commit to telling someone else about their mask, I want you all to commit not to hound them about it. If you hear someone say, "I will," at lunch today, you don't say, "Oh, I heard in Pastor Shauna's sermon that you were going to talk about a mask, so do you have anything to tell me here at lunch?" Don't do that. If you commit to that, will you say, "I will"? I will. Now, if you have a mask today, will you commit this week to telling one person with flesh on about it? If you commit to that, will you say, "I will"? I will. The band's going to come up and they are going to sing one of my favorite songs. It's called "I Am." And what this song talks about, friends, is that it doesn't matter what things you're going through. It doesn't matter what storm you might be experiencing. God is always here to hold you and to carry you through. And my friends, once we are done with this song, you guys are good to go. But can we commit to being God's love with flesh on? Can we commit that if someone talks to us about their mask, that we won't come at a judgmental attitude, but we will show them the grace and mercy that we experience at the throne of God? Join me in prayer today. Father, we love you and we are thankful that you give us examples in secular culture and in your scripture about the work you can do in our lives. That you can use our mess ups and our screw ups as long as we honestly put away our masks and stop pretending. Father, I pray that you will help us this week. God, if anyone made that commitment this week, that you will present them with opportunity after opportunity after opportunity to tell someone about their mass. And then God, do what you do so well and work on it and guide them through it. Because Father, that is why we trust you to work on our lives and do things better than we could ever do them on our own. We love you so much. In Jesus' name, amen.